From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 8th day of May, 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. A bit later in the program, Stephen Platt should join us from Archer Financial Services out of Chicago to take a look at the agricultural energies, and then we'll discuss the weather forecast as we close out our time together. Don Day will be here from Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Along the way, the state statisticians from Illinois, Iowa, Indiana, and Minnesota will update us on conditions in their regions, and it all happens on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media, Public Radio for the Farming World. Find us online at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Tuesday afternoon. We're now joined by Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Hey, what a beautiful afternoon it is. Wayne, thanks for being with us.
It's a beautiful afternoon, and the farmers are flying through the fields. A lot of guys, I'm hearing, finishing up their corn and a very good start on their beans. So the planting's going along at a very fast pace.
Well, this was a turnaround Tuesday, but we had to endure a couple of days that were not very pretty. And finally, in the soybeans, we picked up another 8-9 cents.
Yeah, we got a little modest rally was started over the news that Trump and the Chinese president were talking, and their trading envoy will be visiting the U.S. next week. And, you know, just thinking that at least things are carrying on there and they're talking about things, that along with hitting good support technically yesterday and not going through it and being able to close at or above it. So we did see our turnaround Tuesday activity, a little bit of liquidation because of the funds going into they're long going into the report on Thursday. You know, today the funds were buyers of 3,400 corn, 2,300 beans, and about steady in the wheat and 900 meal. But once again, they're selling the poor sister to bean oil, sold 2,100 contracts there.
So looking forward to that Thursday report, do you suppose there will be any change in the soybean supply-demand table, potentially lowering, I would think, possibly the export number for soybeans for the old crop?
Well, if they don't, I think it's sort of being naive, because even right now, until we can get this thing straightened out with China, even the beans that are sitting over there in port there in that CIQ with the long arduous inspection process holding up our boats over there to even see if they get dumped. So, and nobody between the time period now and then wants to ship any beans out, because they can't get there before the time is when we could possibly start introducing that tariff. So it does seem like it's going to be a thing that should be lower, or the exports to China should definitely be lowered.
On a more positive note for new crop corn, the trade average looking forward for the ending stocks 2018-19 down just somewhere above 1.6 billion bushels. That compared to the 2.1, nearly 2.2 billion bushels we're thinking as a carryout for this fall. That's a big change in numbers.
Yeah, and that's why everybody's been a little bit positive the corn here. We found some very good support here again today and yesterday as we were trying to sell off. And, you know, we didn't take the corn off near as bad as we did the beans. So I think we are looking very positively towards that. We haven't been selling any corn to China, so that really doesn't hurt us much if this other deal does fall through, because they haven't been a buyer.
Anything else that we ought to be watching for? I know I'll have in the newscast a bit about the White House meeting as it relates to ethanol. Sonny Perdue and U.S. EPA Administrator Pruitt apparently put some kind of plan together to go forward for E15 and maybe some exported ethanol.
That would even help the corn market even more, Todd, that way. The one thing that we want to talk about just a little bit is down in Argentina, they're looking at the IMF is talking about loaning them some money. They are so bad now, it's about 40% interest rate down there. So that's one of the big problems that we're seeing with the farmers wanting to hold on to their grain because of the inflation rate.
Indeed. Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate it. We'll talk with you again in a week.
All right. Thank you, Todd.
That, of course, is Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Topping today's agricultural news, President Donald Trump has apparently decided to allow exported ethanol and other biofuels to count towards the annual volumes mandated by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. This took place earlier today. Chuck Grassley, senator from Iowa, says after the White House meeting, there will be no RIN cap, that's the renewable identification numbers, and that E15 year-round is coming. However, he's not seen yet the plan from Secretary Perdue and Administrator Pruitt, that's USDA and EPA, and says the devil is in the details, some of which, by the way, came from Senator Ted Cruz from Texas, who wrote on his Twitter account that RINs would be used for all exports. Scott Irwin, University of Illinois agricultural economist, takes exception with that, writing that if true, the RINs for ethanol exports makes absolutely no sense, this on his Twitter account, and says that's because it's directly contrary to what he calls the North Star of the original congressional intent for the RFS. The RFS is a technology, writes Irwin, for forcing a domestic blend mandate. So, exported ethanol should legally not be able to generate a RIN. On top of this basic RFS legality question, he writes, there is the possibility of RINs on exported ethanol being seen within WTO trade rules as export dumping. The combination, he believes, of very questionable legality of counting RINs on exported ethanol within the RFS and the WTO concerns will probably kill the idea. He goes on to say, we'll see. Under that same categorical heading, conservatives are leaning towards farm bill support. Freedom Caucus Chairman Mark Meadows said that the conservative members could support the House farm bill with some tweaks to make sure it reflects conservative principles. What they want, well, Meadows says, following a meeting late Monday night, that Freedom Caucus members would seek changes to work requirements for food stamp recipients to give states greater sway to create their own tailored jobs programs. Members have also discussed adjustments to the sugar program and a fix to the marriage penalty. The support of hard-right conservatives could give Agriculture Chairman Mike Conaway the votes he needs to pass the bill. GOP leaders know they will have to rely almost entirely on their own members, leaving them little room for defections. That task has been complicated by the fierce opposition of several conservative and libertarian groups, including Heritage Action and those backed by the Koch brothers, which contend the House bill does not do enough to rein in unneeded subsidies to farmers. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture released the weekly crop progress report. It shows as of Sunday, 39% of the corn crop around the nation had been planted. That compares to the rolling five-year average of 44%. 8% of that crop has emerged. The rolling five-year average is 14%. 15% of the soybeans have been put into the ground. The five-year average is 13%. And 20% of the cotton crop is in the ground. That is right on the 20% five-year average. The condition of the wheat crop at this point is 29% fair, 27% good, and 7% excellent. That compares to last week of 30%, 26%, and 7%. And 33% of the crop has headed. The rolling five-year average there is 41%. Now, here are updates from the statisticians in Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota, and Indiana.
This is Ben Torrance, agricultural statistician for the USDA NAS Upper Midwest Region Field Office with the weekly Iowa Crop Progress and Condition Report. Widespread storms delivering heavy rainfall interrupted planting activities and held Iowa farmers to 2.9 days suitable for field work last week. Saturated soil conditions have caused delays in field work and planting activities in the northern two-thirds of the state, while recent rains have failed to eliminate the dry soil conditions in the southern one-third of the state. Iowa growers have planted 40% of the expected corn crop, 3 days behind the five-year average. 2% of the crop has emerged, 5 days behind both last year and the average. Soybean growers have 11% of the expected crop in the ground, 2 days ahead of last year, but equal to the average. 77% of the expected oat crop has been planted, 9 days behind last year, and 1 week behind the average. 32% of the crop has emerged, 11 days behind last year. Recent rain and warmer temperatures have revitalized pasture conditions statewide. Pasture condition rated 40% good to excellent, an increase of 12 percentage points from the previous week. cattle have been turned out for grazing in many areas. For the USDA NAS Upper Midwest Region Field Office, this is Ben Torrance.
This is Mark Schleusener, state statistician for Illinois with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. For the first time in a while, Illinois had temperatures that were above normal last week. Average temps ranged from 6 to 11 degrees above normal across the state. Rainfall was near normal at 88 one-hundredths of an inch, and it was variable across the state. Northern areas were 1/2 inch above normal for the week. There were 4.8 days suitable for field work last week. Corn planting moved forward significantly by 42 points and is now 74% complete, compared to 65% 1 year ago and 56% for the 5-year average. 14% of corn acres have emerged compared to 28% last year and 22% normally. Soybean planting is 29% complete compared to 14% last year and 12% normally. 1% of soybean acres have emerged on par with the 5-year average. 14% of winter wheat acres are heading compared to 76% 1 year ago and 32% normally. The condition of the winter wheat crop was reported as 4% very poor, 8% poor, 35% fair, 45% good, and 8% excellent, a decline from 1 week ago. Pasture conditions were rated 7% very poor to poor, 25% fair, and 68% good to excellent, an improvement from 1 week ago. This has been Mark Schleusener from the Springfield, Illinois Field Office of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. Please be careful as you are driving and watch out for the other guy, as farm equipment will be traveling from field to field in rural areas.
This is Janice Pressberry with the Great Lakes Regional Office of the National Agricultural Statistics Service with the Indiana Crop and Weather Report. Dust flew as planters rolled through the fields last week. The welcome change in the prevailing weather pattern helped to speed up the planting of soybeans and corn. Both moved ahead of the 5-year average, but corn progress is still behind last year. Sunshine and high winds have lowered soy moisture levels, but also limited spraying. Many growers noted overly dry conditions while planting and made depth adjustments or bet on the rains in the forecast. Cereal grains were cut for silage. Pasture conditions improved and livestock are reported to be in good condition. Other activities for the week included field preparation, tile installation, finishing anhydrous applications, tillage, and spreading fertilizers. That concludes this week's Indiana Crop and Weather Report for the week ending May 6, 2018. This is Janice Pressberry reporting.
This is Dan Loftus for the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office with the weekly crop progress and condition report for the week ending May 6, 2018. Warm and dry weather across much of Minnesota created favorable conditions for field work. There were 4.4 days suitable for field work during the week. While some areas in northern Minnesota still report having frost in the ground, last week's warmer temperatures allowed farmers in many areas to apply anhydrous and dry fertilizer to fields, conduct tillage activities, and plant small grains, potatoes, and sugar beets. Topsoil moisture supplies rated 1% very short, 6% short, 71% adequate, and 22% surplus. Subsoil moisture supplies rated 0% very short, 4% short, 83% adequate, and 13% surplus. Minnesota's spring wheat was 27% planted, that's 5 days behind last year and 12 days behind the 5-year average. Oats were also reported at 27% planted, and that's 2 weeks behind last year and 16 days behind average. Planting of barley was reported at 15% complete, that's 5 days behind last year and 16 days behind average. Corn planting was 9% completed, that's 9 days behind last year and 16 days behind average. And soybeans were 1% planted, that's 4 days behind last year and 10 days behind average. Pastures are starting to green up in much of the state, with some producers moving cattle to pastures in southern Minnesota. For the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
Our thanks to the state statisticians for their weekly updates of crop progress in their regions. Now we're joined by Stephen Platt at Archer Financial Services out of Chicago, Illinois, to take a look at the agricultural energies. Earlier today, President Donald Trump pulled the United States out of the Iran nuclear deal. Are there implications because this is a Middle East region and a producer of crude oil for that sector of the economy?
Well, we actually, the reaction was actually on the downside here today. I think many people were expecting the market to be actually higher in reaction to the news, but that in fact did not occur, and the market saw some of the weakest trade that we've seen in quite some time, with crude at one point down over $2 and currently off about $1 currently. Certainly the response was unexpected. I think it reflects the realization that the impact of the U.S. dropping out of the pact without the other European nations actually agreeing to the reimposition of sanctions is really telling, in that you are looking at Iran sending most, actually a quarter of their exports to Europe currently. The other three quarters would be going to Japan, China, and India. So the impact might be considerably less, given that the U.S. is not even importing oil from the world market currently. In fact, there's a lot of factors that could play against the market as we move through the summer. Certainly the production agreement, which OPEC has enforced with other non-OPEC producers, such as Russia, is going to be a key talking point as we move toward June. That agreement does end at the end of this year. And certainly as prices move higher, the participants in that agreement certainly have a stronger incentive to export more oil rather than less as prices go up. Another factor is certainly the demand side. What impact will higher prices have on demand? That certainly can play a role in terms of forcing more supply back onto the market that could depress prices. Another factor is certainly the U.S. expanding production and the incentive to pump more money into investment in oil facilities. There's many properties now that are looking more and more profitable given the higher prices, which does lead to a surplus such as we saw 3 years ago when prices did break hard and subsequently responded to that supply-demand scenario. So overall, I think you have to think that some factors are starting to come into play that could actually pose more resistance to values at these kinds of price levels than what we've seen in quite some time, and subsequently will need to be addressed, I think, by OPEC as we move toward the conclusion of their pact.
Is there any implication of the discussions that took place in the White House today as it relates to ethanol, whether that be for the export market, potential needing to build more capacity, or as it reports to E15 for the same reason? And we have maybe 40 seconds or so if you have any answer.
Well, there's been a lot of discussion about some of these exemptions that have taken place in terms of the blenders. Some of these exemptions have displaced some of the ethanol and also biodiesel to the detriment of the mandate. And that certainly has to be looked at in terms of the market. In terms of the expansion, I would have to look at it more closely, Don.
Thanks so much, Steve. We appreciate it.
Sure. Have a great day.
Stephen Platt is with Archer Financial Services. This is the closing market report for Tuesday afternoon. Don Day is here from Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. A lot of warmth in the Midwest now, Don. It's gorgeous here. How about where you are?
Yeah, it really has warmed up in a lot of areas, thankfully. A lot of folks thought it would never get here, but finally, the last week or so, we've finally been able to crack the nut that's made it so cold across most of the nation during the month of April. And now it really does look like, while there's still going to be some ups and downs, it's still early May. More often than not, we are certainly looking at a warmer pattern here over the next 7 to 10 days.
Now, however, I was looking ahead at some of the North Dakota temperatures and the highs just in the 50s later in the week. They've been moving pretty well there. I want to hear about them, Nebraska, Minnesota in particular, which has had a tough time getting the crop in because it's just been really cold.
Yeah, well, there is going to be a system that's going to be moving across the northern plain states this weekend into early next week. That is going to bring some cooler weather to those northern plains, to the Dakotas and Minnesota, but it's not one of those systems that looks like it's going to settle in and be cool for too long, as the return flow on the backside of it will be able to warm things up again. You know, if there's an area of the U.S. where we're still going to be susceptible to some cold shots, it's going to be those northern plains. But the warm-ups in between, I think, are going to be enough to even things out.
And then if you move into Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, what do you see?
Well, I see a pattern that is certainly warmer, as we have seen, but we're going to have a couple of systems that's going to bring more rain. There's going to be a system coming in later this week. Pretty good band of showers and thunderstorms will be moving through two of these systems, one earlier this week, and then as we get into especially as we get into Thursday night, Friday, we're going to be a cluster of thunderstorms over Nebraska, portions of southern Minnesota, northwest Iowa that could produce 1 to 2 inch rains in some areas. Then another system comes in over the Mother's Day weekend, and that's going to produce an east to west area of rain from Nebraska to Iowa across central northern Illinois and Indiana.
Any information on 10 days out across the Corn Belt that we ought to know about?
If you were to add up the averages, if you were to look at 10 days as a whole, temperatures are going to be pretty much spot on average, and I think for the most part, rainfall is going to be close to average as well. The areas that are going to be the coolest and the wettest will be those northwest Corn Belt areas.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you, sir.